Matthews against the wall, still after it. Here's a wraparound. Coming in front, they score! Tavares setting up Auston Matthews! And the Leafs' big guns have exploded here in the second period, and it is 4-1.
Hopefully Kemper's all right. He's been unbelievable for us all year long. Just in his role, being able to play against some of the top guys, producing, scoring some big goals, creating some big plays that lead to big goals. So, I think fingers crossed that it's nothing serious and he's all right. But, he's been a really key part to our successes here.
You get a goal. And you get a goal. And you get a point. We all get a point. Woo! Toronto Maple Leafs, most importantly, two of them. Two big ones, baby. On the road, 12 of 14. Freight train. Everybody chipping in, except for Nick Ritchie. Obviously, Nick Ritchie
poor
got
guy.
No points. He got a penalty, though, at the end
he
of the game.
He got on the score sheet.
Sick. Sick one.
That's all that matters.
The in-game underkiller. Nick Ritchie.
Oh, poor JD.
Big Rich.
Not
as
like
Austin
today.
Matthews called him.
Yeah, Big Rich. Yeah.
Not you anymore. Big Poor.
Yeah, Big Poor. Raptors,
that
though.
Bad
I hit all of my bets last
hey,
night.
Homer's Bing Parlay. Homer's Parlay comes through.
Homer's Parlay. That's what, yeah.
Bing yep, that's
bong.
Right. Ailish is rich. Coffee's on Ailish today.
No, Ailish spent too much on chips, so we're just breaking even here.
You didn't spend too much on chips. You spent too much on cat food and toilet paper. Tell the truth.
It's disgusting.
That's the truth.
Anyway, hit my bets. Feeling good this morning. We're going to talk to Cabby about it. I'm going to brag. Night I hit all my bets and coming in like, yeah, I'm an expert.
I love how in your mind, it's like, we're having Cabby in. It's like, what's the topic today?
Ailish's bets.
Well, Ailish won her bets. We're going to run it down. We're going to go one by one, Cabby. You just sit there and you listen to Ailish tell you about what bets she won and how she won them. What else did you win?
No, I did a Homer's Parlay and then I did another Homer's Parlay and added two different sites and added the Oilers in there too, which was a bit tight.
I thought you were doing JD's NBA parlay.
Oh, I did
too,
JD's NBA
did
parlay,
hit.
Which sucked.
Wow, that's kind of rude considering that.
One of three.
You know what I hated about that parlay? I hit the underdog, of course. Lakers at tip off. By the way, I bet the Lakers twice yesterday because early in the morning they were, I think it was 1.5 points when I bet it. Mm. And then it swelled up to +6.5.
Ooh.
And that was just because Anthony Davis was out. But some of us know Anthony Davis sucks. And that he's actually not that good. Some of us are me. And so I bet the Lakers. And it was great. If you bet the Leafs, you're reesh, and you didn't sweat it out, and you were feeling good last night, freight train win. Just completely steamrolled that Kings team. First of all, what did you guys think about the helmets?
Oh, come on. They're awful.
I agree. I don't mean to be a hater. I like the Golden Knights one because there's like a Vegas tinge to it. But this kind of felt...
It's like a tinfoil hat. Like, it's too shiny.
It just reminded me of like a Star Wars nerd thing where they're like, where are Star Wars? And I'm like, okay. They felt like they were coming down for the, what's it called? Comic-Con convention.
Oh, yeah.
Chrome Dome guy, Blake?
No. I thought they looked like the Shockmaster from WCW. Remember that old...
I didn't remember that, but I saw you write it down.
I was a little nervous to Google Shockmaster.
Yeah, I know.
I was clear in the doc that it's not what it sounds like.
Still.
You know what's funny, though? You said that. You were like, Shockmaster, this isn't a dirty thing. I thought about Shockwave because I'm old and I had a Discman that was a Shockwave. And I remember going, it lasts 40 seconds in a paint can, bro. 40 seconds, no skips. Do you know what a Discman is?
Yeah, I had one, but I don't know what you're talking about with the paint can.
So there used to be these things where they would tell you like how long it would take without skipping.
Yeah.
You know how like on a watch it goes, it can go underwater for long, but it's never true. It's like, don't test it. It's like, oh, you could swim down to the bottom of the ocean
but
and this watch will work. And then you put it in a shallow kiddie pool and it's like, oh, it broke. It's a broken watch. And if you ever tried to bring it back to the store, they'd be like, yeah, did you put it in water, you big idiot? it was the same thing. These Discmans. Or in 2021, these disc peoples, you would have these little numbers on them. Uh-huh. And I think it would be like 40 was on the Shockwave and it would say like that lasts 40 seconds in a paint can shaker before it skips, man.
Except, that's actually stunning.
Except for it was a lie.
Oh yeah. Rollerblade down Grand Ridge. Yeah. You're getting
really?
Skips all over. Your Kid Rock album is chopped to bits.
Yeah. Kid Rock.
Very fun.
That Bill Simmons HBO documentary on Woodstock is out. My friend was talking about that with me yesterday about Kid Rock. Yeah. How it just really, Kid Rock, music doesn't hold up. It's tough that at the same time, our generation had a song called Nookie and a song called Ba Wa Ta Ba. And we were like, these are the hits that we get behind.
Yeah. Or if you were rollerblading along Grand Ridge, listen to your Discman. Ba Wa Ta Ba, Da Ba, Da Ba, Da Ba, Da Ba, Da Ba, Da Ba.
That's pretty good.
Good one.
So again, just a absolutely beautiful performance by the Toronto Maple Leafs. It's one of those ones where at the end of the game, the shots, they look even and the game was just dominance, complete and utter dominance. But let's start with, it's kind of the good and the bad, the injury to David Camp.
Oh.
It's not good at all that he gets hurt. Obviously, the guy has been critically important to this season. I think that he has been an identity shifter for the Toronto Maple Leafs in terms of their complete buy-in to playing great team defensive hockey and being a shutdown team. Mm-hmm. He's been one of the anchors of that. I would argue that so far this season, he has been their sixth most important forward.
Okay.
Thoughts on that? He's behind Kasha, I think. And
yes, yeah. He's behind Kasha.
And the thing with Kasha that I really liked last night is Kasha, there was this whole thing about, hey, he and Camp are really tight. Mm-hmm. They do everything together. They're the two best friends. And to see Kasha play the way that he did without Kampf, it's not like I think David Kampf is some kind of like massive line driver. I know that Kasha is the line driver on with that group, offensively anyways, but that it didn't feel like they lost anything, albeit in a blowout, was critical and is something I'm going to watch. But they lose Kampf, he falls down, and he gets clipped. He gets clipped in the head and then he falls on the ice. Just the way he got up, it seemed like it's going to be a multiple injury type of thing.
It was like a shoulder slash. I mean, he definitely got hit in the head, so maybe precautionary in terms of concussion. But it did look like he was favoring his shoulder a bit more. Yeah.
So the team said, he didn't return for precautionary reasons. Is the term?
Which is a weird way to put it.
Yeah,
right?
It is a weird way to put it.
And then he'll be reevaluated today, but there were almost no details of it about it after the game.
Yeah.
So, read into that what you will.
So they lose him. But this was the good, was the team didn't really miss a beat.
Mm-hmm.
And again, if you would have told me preseason, hey, the Leafs lost David Kampf and they played great, I would have gone, yeah, cool. I would expect them to.
Do you mean you lost them to a healthy scratch? Or?
Yeah, exactly. But for them to play that way without him, I thought was a really, really great sign. And watching how that actually works out over the next couple of games is going to be of critical import, because
that third line has been their shutdown, their consistency. It'll be tough if they have to shake that up. Hopefully that's not the situation. And then you're like, who goes there?
Yeah, Richie
again.
Well, I got to figure that Semyonov draws in because he's a centerman and they give him a look either. Here's my guess.
Big bad Clifford.
Here's my guess. They've been kind of using Kerfoot, who sneakily is leading this team in 5-on-5 goals.
Yep.
5-on-5 points.
It's wild.
Yeah. The one of the whipping boys for this franchise, by myself included, has had a terrific season. But I wonder if they'll flip him back to center and they'll ask him to get a little run there with Kasha and Richie still, and then try bumping up somebody else, or bring in Semyonov, put him down the bottom line, see if Wayne Simmons can give you more up the lineup,
just
because he's playing so well.
Simmons had a phenomenal evening.
That fourth
line was fire.
Which kills me, because we ran out of time yesterday and I had a take on the fourth line. And I bet Engvall to score last night, because Engvall and Simmons' shooting percentages are like 2 and 3%. And it's just like, it's not going to continue that way. And Spezza's still too good of a facilitator. Anyway.
They really don't get credit for the takes
that didn't make the air, right?
Yeah.
Hey, so. I'll give you credit for that bet, as long as you tell me what were the odds on that? Like plus 550, plus 600?
Yeah, I think it was 500.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Simmons was 400, and that was the differentiator for me between going Simmons or Engvall.
You always think it's more. You always think it's more, and then you go look at goal scoring props.
This is the issue with goal scoring props. Is like, okay, plus 500 suggests roughly that Engvall would be like a 16-goal scorer over the course of a season.
I like how you just have that out there.
I don't have a lot of faith in that.
I look at it as he's going to score once every five games.
Yeah.
I know.
Which is a 16-goal pace.
Yeah. I can't but the number's more, you know? I'm just like, that's it, 1 in 5.
Right, but don't you think that's an easier way to visualize it? It's like, okay, Engvall scoring at a 16-goal pace versus...
No, I don't, because I'm dumb and you're smart. And if I do it that way and you do it that way, that it's like I did it the easier way. I think that's pretty clear. If there's one thing that's like irrefutable on the show, it's that Blake Murphy is infinitely better at math than me. Like, that's just a fact.
Did you say infinitely?
Yeah, because I'm an infant and I can't speak. So they dominate. And I got to say that really my take from this game was just how deep the team feels right now. Mm-hmm. They just feel so deep that they could miss a guy who has been an anchor centerman and look that way.
Yeah, so I thought, you know, that my biggest takeaway initially was, hey, right away, it's the Kasha line getting them back on track. Like, yeah. I think it probably meant a lot in terms of the, you know, that collective sigh on the bench or tension of like, oh, shoot. What just happened? Are we going to be okay? And then that Kasha has that beautiful saucer pass to Kerfoot. And the fact that it was that line driving it right away was good, I thought. So I know you guys kind of teed up the what happens here, who draws in. I want to throw another possibility by you, because I think my biggest concern here, if Kampf is going to mix significant time, is that you just don't have a way to replicate the identity of that third line. Mm-hmm. Like, it's driven by Kampf and Kasha. I don't think dropping even a Semyonov, who, you know, is a decent defensive player and a fairly, like, safe set of hands as far as 13th men go, I don't think you're going to replicate that. And you've already been bouncing guys around the left side of that line. I wonder if we see another look at that experiment where Kasha was on the top line, because your third line's going to lose its identity anyway. Mm. I don't know that it's what I do, but they did try him up there on one of the back-to-backs. And if your third line's not your third line anymore while Kampf's out, maybe it's worth a shot. Of course, maybe you're also not tweaking a game after you scored 6 goals.
Yeah, I think you're leaving Kasha as a line driver until he proves he isn't. And to me, this actually maybe isn't Semyonov. This is Ailish's boy, Kyle Clifford. Because what I think you can do here is, like I said, move Kerfoot down to that third line and not have it. He's not going to be Kasha defensively, but he's going to be more offensive. They scored together right away. Mm-hmm. And I think you move Engvall back with that group, and then Richie's going to end up getting another tryout, or you bump Simmons up and you bump Richie back down to the fourth line.
I like that better.
And you have this fourth line where you go, hey, now it's Kyle Clifford and Nick Richie and Jason Spezza, of all things. But hey, you two guys go out there and bang bodies and be rough and tumble, and Jason's going to be the finesse of this line.
And Spezza, you have two options to bank the puck off of.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that for sure. I think the answer is probably that they're going to try a couple of these things if Kampf's out for a little bit. I'm with you on Kasha, you know, seeing what he can do as a line driver on his own. And he has been not to the same level when he's apart from Kampf, but they've played like so much of their minutes. Like, they've played almost 80% of their minutes together. So it's hard to do much with the sample of Kasha away from Kampf at 5-on-5. They haven't been great apart from each other, but...
And they got a nice day off today to see if Kampf is okay. And then I guess we'll find out probably later when they have a pregame or a practice this afternoon to see if he's going to be in the lineup.
It looks so bad, but with the way that Kasha has taken like 8 different hits this year
and
where I thought
right
he
back.
Was dead,
yeah,
that it would be kind of, I don't want to say ironic, that's probably not correct, but if it ends up being Kampf, who's the guy who gets hurt the first time he takes one of those, and Kasha's looking at it and he's the Iron Man who's stringing it together, yeah, it would be a bit strange.
Got to give a shout out to the Kings, especially Durzi, mm-hmm. who's a local guy.
I have a Durzi take.
Okay. He scores in his first NHL game. The Leafs actually traded him away. He's a local kid, grew up loving the Leafs, gets his first assist and his first ever goal against Toronto Maple Leafs last night. That's always how it happens, is it not?
Uh-huh. Listen, as soon as that kid was traded from the Leafs, he was destined to score his first goal against the Leafs.
It's just like you should have put money on it. Just like the other week when Trevor Moore scored against the Leafs, It's just like that.
I like that we've reached the point in hockey culture where everyone's now just skipping the part of the process where you get a very hockey nickname and the last names are just fitting it. Like Dursey. Yeah. Like Dursey. That, I almost guarantee you someone on the team calls Travis Dermott Dursey already.
Oh, yeah.
That's really good.
So we'll just skip that step in the process. We'll streamline it here.
Anything else on camp before I give you the Dursey take?
No.
Feeling good? I have more, but we can save that for either something to chew on or if we do a one big number or something later.
Okay, because I was going to say, you want to hit me with that one big number, you can hit it with me now, right now.
Okay, let's do it. So this is the one big number. The number is 392. That is, there are 392 qualified or 392 forwards this year who have played at least 100 minutes at 5-on-5.
Okay.
David Kampf ranks 392nd, dead last, in offensive zone start percentage. Wow. There is no forward in the NHL who has played a heavier defensive workload than David Kampf. Koch is number two, but Kampf's number one, 392nd in terms of offensive zone start percentage. Oh, no matter what they do to juggle these lines, no matter what they do to try to see if Kasha can drive a line or see who can replicate Kampf, there is no chance, I think, that Sheldon Keefe trusts whatever iteration that third line ends up being to that extreme a degree, because no coach in the NHL trusts any line to the extreme degree that Sheldon Keefe has trusts the Kampf-Kasha pairing.
So after every Leafs game, Blake is going to bring out one big number that sticks out from the game or the context of the game. And I got to tell you, that's one hell of a debut.
392 out of 392.
That here I am sitting here this morning going, you know, it's fine. They are going to be just fine, which is, again, very strange because I really have had the thought all season long of, boy, they can't lose Kampf for Kasha, because if they lose Kampf for Kasha, they're just like this group changes. It shifts so drastically. And there is a part of me that goes, boy, Wayne Simmonds is playing very well and Spezza continues to play well, but how's this going to look as the season goes on, right? That's just a fair, I think that's a fair question for guys of that age and guys who are playing the way that they are right now is, hey, after 82 games or whatever, 77 that they end up playing because they end up getting some rest, what's this going to look like? Mm-hmm. You have noticed that Wayne Simmonds is like way less interested in the scrapping and the physicality. Like he came in here and
he's
like
a finesse player now.
Yeah. Well, if I was toe dragging and making passes like that, I probably would be, you know what? I don't want to fight. That's 5 minutes. I can't play with the puck.
It's true. But it's one of those things where when he first came here, it was looked at, hey, Wayne Simmonds, how you're going to stick in the league is beating the ever living crap out of people. And now Wayne Simmonds is realizing, you know, I can probably stick in the league with more of the Spezza model, which is in sheltered minutes. I can actually provide some offense. Hey, newsflash, I wasn't just some scrub who punched people in the face. I was Wayne Simmonds, and I am Wayne Simmonds, and I've scored a lot of goals, and I've actually been known to blend those things very, very well.
Yeah. Have you seen these hands?
Right.
Like 200 career goals. Yeah.
So I'm a little suspect of it maintaining, but the way that they're being sheltered, the way that they're avoiding the back-to-backs, so far, so good.
Now,
so,
the back-to-backs thing, you lose Kampf, and Mikheyev's not back yet.
Do that.
It is, but luckily they don't have one until December 4th, 5th, so they got a little bit of time here.
But they did go out and grab Kyle Clifford, and now that's why I sort of wonder if the Kyle Clifford addition was a little bit more with that in mind of, hey, Kyle, you're the one who actually has to punch the faces.
Yeah.
Kyle, like, you're the one who has to come in here and be the nasty one, because that's not as much of what we want from Simmonds. We don't really necessarily want him throwing the body around as much as he was last year. Either way, that Kampf number that you brought up.
392.
392.
Of 392.
Can you tell me what he's been in previous seasons? Like, dominant?
If you give me a second, I can.
I'll tell you this. It's probably going to be the majority of his zones being, or his starts being defensive zone draws, because that's what he is. He's a checking line center. But I think that the number itself there, where it's like you are dead last in them, is pretty damn telling of just the way that Sheldon Keefe trusts this guy in the zone that he, I think, cares the most about.
So he's started 12% of his shifts in the offensive zone this year.
Yeah.
He has generally been a low offensive zone start guy, but that we're talking last year, 32%. The year before that, 41%, 37%. So he's
12% is like almost impossible. It's like what? That's so low. That's so unbelievably low.
So the lowest anyone finished last year was 15.5%, and that was Michael McCarron, who only played 105 minutes.
Sounds like Michael McDonald.
Yeah. So the only guy with, like, once we get to like a reasonable sample, like Nick Dowd started 20% of his shifts in the offensive zone. That's it.
So Ailish, what do you think this just does to a team where all of a sudden your coach, and this will be interesting for Bruce Boudreau to weigh in on later too, mm-hmm. where all of a sudden the guy that is your trustworthy defensive player, your number one trustworthy defensive player, where you feel calm when they're on the ice mm-hmm. and the puck is in your zone, what that does to the psyche of the team?
Well, I think at the beginning of the season, that was the most confident that we had felt watching the defense when that line was able to take all the defensive zone faceoffs, and it allowed that core four to kind of take more offensive-minded approach to their game and not have to worry about being a shutdown line. So I worry a bit about them having to take a step back and shelter themselves and take some more defensive zone starts, which obviously is not ideal if they're firing like they were last night. So I don't think too much of the psyche in terms of them being like, oh no, we're screwed. But I just think the markup of where they start their zones and the amount of workload that like a Tavares might have now, having to start a little bit back in the D zone. And that could be something down the road, depending on how long he's out for or if he's out at all, that maybe shifts how much offensive spark we're seeing with like the core four guys once again. But
I like that Tavares take.
Yeah, like what does he have to start taking, you know, more D-zone starts? Is that a heavier workload? Does that mean that he's a matchup center against a big line? That's not ideal, obviously, because they've basically been able to avoid all that and then just play in the offensive zone, which has been nice to watch and also great for their points.
Yeah, he's almost certainly your key defensive zone faceoff guy now, mm-hmm. which is something Kampf was helping fill in on.
Yeah. That's a really interesting ripple effect here is, okay, so if we're doing the Kerfoot jumps into the third line thing, you've now taken away Tavares' best winger, or at least the guy who's been producing the most with Tavares, when he hasn't been with Marner, of course. So you're taking something away from Tavares, and then you're asking him to kind of shift back into that mode that he was in last year. If you remember last season, there was a building story early in the year of, hey, Nylander and Tavares are not producing, and these guys are getting paid way too much. But everyone around the Maple Leafs went, hey, we are trying to focus more defensively, and Tavares has been, this is where he is as a captain. He mm-hmm. leads by example, and if you look at the things that he is doing defensively and you look at the metrics from his defensive play, they are astronomically different because of his approach. This year, you were sort of hoping that with the Kampf line that, yeah, that top six is a little bit more free, that they do get more of those offensive opportunities. The one thing now I'm wondering is, if that's the case, are you potentially flipping Marner and Nylander again, which you saw a little bit last night, right? There was some line juggling. Mm-hmm. And maybe that was in part because of what you just said, which is, again, it's really hard when you're watching a game like that where it's 6-1 and the game is just kind of becoming a runaway to the point where we're all texting, like, can we go to bed after the second period, right? It's one of those where you're not as locked in, you're not as focused. So I'll admit that there's probably some nuances that I missed in that game. But I wonder if that was a part of it, that Marner and Tavares, that those two guys both profile a little bit better as responsible defensive players. Like, Marner, I thought, someday could win a Selke. I think he's really that good when he buys into it. The mm-hmm. problem is that you're going to ask him to do too much offensively. He's not going to end up doing that. Maybe, though, that it does end up with a Matthews, Nylander, Marner line like we talked about yesterday. And then you're asking Tavares to be a little bit more defensive, and you're putting maybe Kasha ends up with him, Blake. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's not a guarantee that it's like he jumps over the top. Maybe you have it where it's like Tavares, Kasha, Bunting, and you ask those guys to kind of grind for you, and Kerfoot centers a third line that's different with Engvall and then potentially Mikheyev. This is all hilarious because it could all end up going to
yeah,
pot.
Yeah, Kasha could be fine.
Well, no, or Kampf, yeah. But,
yeah, sorry,
yeah,
Kampf.
But
Kasha's fine.
Yeah, I was going to say,
don't even say that.
But I love shows like this. But it really is hard to believe, given the hit and the way that he fell, the way that he reacted, that he is coming back. Can I shift to a couple of other rapid-fire things now?
Yeah. What's your jersey take?
The jersey take is actually simple. It was something that I was thinking of because it was actually in concert with what we talked about with Keith Law yesterday, which is
keeping an eye on your former prospects.
Yeah, your former prospects. But so there's this weird thing where fans never want, and I'm guilty of this too. I'm not saying fans like, you know, you people and you're, it's, this
listen
is us.
Listen here, brother.
Right. Fans generally, when they make a trade and they move off prospects, want those prospects to be busts. And I get it, because you don't want a young player to become a superstar, right? Everyone remembers how it felt when there was that, oh my God, Ari Dickey might be a 5 ERA guy and Noah Syndergaard might be one of the best pitchers in baseball feeling, right? Like, you don't want that. You really never want that. But don't you want Sean Dursey to be good? And I don't mean that from the, like, 2021 sports fan Twitter way where you're like, everyone is awesome and I root for everybody to be great and get your bag, King. So the way I'm looking at Joe, just though, is that you want the Leafs to be hitting on drafts. Mm-hmm. And you want them to also be hitting on players that, if they trade away, end up being good, so that other teams, if they're going to make a trade down the Leafs prospect system where there might be someone that is a little bit more suspect, you say, well, look at these other players that they were able to give up from this team. Mm-hmm. And if you even think about that Muzzin trade, it was supposed to be Liljegren. That was the rumor, right? That the Leafs offered Liljegren. The Kings said no. They wanted Dursey. They grabbed Dursey. Both those guys end up being good players. Mm-hmm. You're feeling better about it. So I think there's this weird, hey, that was actually a perfect night where Sean Dursey scores the goals against the Leafs, but it's meaningless. That's his debut. He's just been tearing up the AHL. Maybe he's not a star, but if he's a really good player and you ended up with Jake Muzzin, who's been a really good player and an important player for you, mm-hmm. that ultimately, as a sports fan, that's the best case scenario. That it shows that your scouting is good, that your management is good, and that even though they made a trade where they moved somebody good, like, that's okay. It's actually a better indicator of what it means to be part of your organization.
Yeah, and I mean, look at the way we've talked about the Leafs' depth this year, and yeah, the Marlies aren't exactly overflowing with guys ready to come up and contribute necessarily, but they gave up Bjornfot, Grundstrom, and Dursey in that Muzzin trade. Or I guess in the case of Bjornfot, it was the pick that became him, but still.
I was going to say, I never heard of Bjornfot.
Yeah.
Did you say Bjornfot?
Bjornfot.
Yeah. like you're already on the pronunciation guide. It's okay.
I got it right. Yeah. Bjornfot. Well, I guess the R, yeah, Bjornfot.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway, he played last night too, so.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I think it's a good thing anytime you do a depth consolidation trade like that,
mm-hmm.
and you still profile fairly well depth-wise,
mm-hmm.
that says a lot about what you're doing. And it's not like you can have limitless numbers of contracts to fill out the roster.
I think the best way to analyze what it's like as a fan when your ex goes on to be successful is, I'm happy for Dursey. And the way that you mentioned, he was a Leafs guy, they saw, and they traded off on him. Whereas Zach Hyman, different situation, he's off successful in a different team, and you lost him, and that hurts more, in my perspective, than someone that you, as you said, shows good promise, shows that the Leafs know, you know, how to pick the right players. You almost want, yeah, you want him to be successful, because it bodes well for you. Not when someone leaves your team and then goes off to light it up and you're like, well, we just made a huge error. We couldn't make the situation last with someone who's now going on to be like a point per game guy.
See, the Hyman thing doesn't hurt as much right now because the Leafs are playing so well.
True. I can't wait for them to play the Oilers, which will be fun. Eh?
Absolutely. I'm just looking at it saying, if Nick Ritchie made the same amount of money as Zach Hyman, mm-hmm. I'd be having, you know, panic attacks every night. But I knew what the situation was this year. And we look at the money and it's like, hey, go find the money for Zach Hyman. And mm-hmm. right now, I would say that even with Nick Ritchie, if you took Bunting, Ritchie, Camp, Kasha, that's somewhere combined around the money that Hyman's getting this year, right? Pretty close to. I'd rather have those four guys than one Zach Hyman this season.
Okay, so also think of it in another person that was a Leaf and then played for the Kings last night, Trevor Moore.
Uh-huh.
He was undrafted. They saw him out of University of Denver.
I was never really a Trevor Moore guy.
Well, that's like, in my perspective, okay, he came, they found him. Mm-hmm. They did, like, he was part of the first ever Calder Cup win. He was a good Marlies guy. He had mm-hmm. his time with the organization. He moved on. I'm happy that he's doing well in his place because it shows that, again, the Leafs found someone.
Uh-huh.
They did their scouting. They know what they're looking for, and he's on having some more success somewhere else.
And you're doing just fine with Jack Campbell, the return for that
exactly.
trade. And I think fair or unfair.
You always forget that it's just like, it's not the Muzzin trade that they did get Jack Campbell. So yeah. Thank you yeah. for mentioning that, because I didn't even say his name.
Right.
He's the better, more important of the yeah. two players right
and,
now.
And that's the thing. And like, so you look and had Muzzin been a bad trade or Jack Campbell was really bad or something like that, then maybe you feel differently about those things. And that's a little bit yeah. of like judging by if the shot goes in, like you got to call the shot in the air, mm-hmm. whether it was a good trade or not. But in terms of how a fan feels about this, yeah, you're always going to feel a little better when your side of the trade was good too. Sometimes it is a win-win.
Good trade. Good trade. Good trade.
Good trade.
Yeah, good trade. There we go. There we go. Come on. I can't believe you didn't jump in on that.
It was too late. You only did it twice.
It was too late.
Turn my mic back on.
Yeah, I think that it's a fine line, and I'm certainly not suggesting that people are just going and looking out and openly rooting for, and it's like, it's very subjective, right? Or it's a case-by-case basis, because I think that if it's like Austin Martin, you kind of are rooting a little bit against Austin Martin because he's just a superstar prospect that fell into the Blue Jays' laps. Like, that wasn't exactly some type of scouting coup. That was someone who was projected as a top three player in the draft, falling to them, and them just kind of taking the best player available. And I don't want to be a bum, but I'm just saying there's something where if he does turn out to be a bum, you're kind of like, oh, that's not so bad.
I think that's maybe more of a baseball thing too, just where like there are so many more prospects and so many more of them get traded.
Yeah.
And like, it's the whole Anthopoulos thing, right? Where you look back at all the guys he traded away in those years, and other than Syndergaard and I guess Darnold, but Darnold took years and rarely stayed healthy. But like, a lot of those prospects, like, are you fretting about Matt Boyd? It's like, it's a little, it's at least a little funny to be like, huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Weird prospects, eh?
Exactly. And I think, though, to kind of tie it all together with the Leafs, and when Ailish brings up Trevor Moore, that component of it too, is that, again, this is supposed to be one of the strengths of Kyle Dubas. Identifying guys that can fit in down the roster at a cheaper number. Somebody who is a misidentified talent that they believe can come in and supplement their group with a lower cap hit. And this season, this has been the best look for him. Richie was going to dominate the headlines early, but now it's pretty clear that Camp, Kasha, Bunting, that all three of those contracts are coups. And if you look outside of it and you say, oh, wow, Trevor Moore. Oh, wow, Sean Dursey, who's a second-round pick. That's actually hitting. Those things, I think, bode well for your confidence as a Leaf fan that, hey, this management group is doing a better job, not only scouting, but also evaluating players that are from less traditional means, guys who get developed within the system. I want to do this thing. My last rapid-fire thing was on Sandin. We don't have enough time for it. I'll bring it up later in the show.
Great night, though. Yeah,
it was a really nice night for Sandin. But before we take a break and we do the A-list, because I want to give you guys time to think about this. Last night, there's this, the Curry brothers played each other. Seth versus Steph. Steph, there is a play in the game where he absolutely embarrasses Seth, like really embarrasses him. And they're laughing and it's fun. And I don't mean it embarrassing in the sense of like it actually being bad. They're brothers and they obviously clown on each other all the time. But I want you to think about a time where your sibling has embarrassed you the most. And I want you to share that later in the show. So think about that, Stu, on that. If you got one, by the way, text that in, 590-590, or tweet us at JD Bunkus, at Blake Murphy, Blake Murphy. Oh, I'm screwing up the Twitter handles. Blake Murphy ODC is Twitter, and at Ailish4Far. Let us know. You can send DMs, too, on Instagram. Let us know about a time that you were the most embarrassed by your sibling.
Wait, I think most embarrassed by them, or they embarrassed you?
Embarrassed you for sure. They embarrassed you. Not you were most embarrassed by that. That's less cute. That's not really fun to just air your sibling grievance on
one
the
time
air.
My brother was an idiot.
Yeah,
exactly.
No, that you got embarrassed by your sibling. Either they pranked you, either it could be anything. Just let us know.
Tough.
Yeah, I know. That's why I said I didn't want to just
listening.
Do it on spot.
He'll send me
I hope
answer.
He does. I hope he does. And look at Vic. He's already stewing away. Danielle's stewing away. I love it. Everybody with siblings got this. I'm sorry to all those of you that are only children. You get left out. All right? Sorry. Let's take a break. Let's come back.
The A-List.
It's the Fan Morning Show. Ailish Forfar, JD Bunkus, Blake Murphy, Sportsnet 5-9 of the Fan.
Welcome back to the Fan Morning Show. It's that time of the morning.
Were we eat chips?
No chips today. I felt disgusting yesterday. I did a long workout and I still felt like that didn't really make up for the fact that we ate chips in the 6 o'clock hour of our lives.
Yeah, you can't really scrub out the stain of eating chips at 6 in the morning.
It's kind of just a write-off that day.
Also, it's really cool when, you know, people you call your friends take a permanent shot of you for the record of you.
Yeah, that was a good pick. Eh?
Yeah, thanks. I'll remember that.
Should we do your question before the A-list? Yeah.
No, let's keep, like I said, give it time. Okay. Let it breathe.
Give it time to marinate.
Yeah.
All right.
There's no rush. There's no rush. But if you missed it, tell us about a time that your sibling embarrassed you.
I got lots. All right.
Yeah. But I want the one that just like, and every sibling should kind of have a feeling of the thing pops into mind. And you go, oh boy, I was pressing that memory.
Now it has risen to the surface. Here.
But it's okay because this is therapy.
Yeah.
You can talk it out.
It's free.
See, I think Daniela knows his. He's looking. He's like, he knows. You know. It's okay, Daniela. You know. A-list.
Okay, welcome to the A-list.
Now it's time for Let Us A.
A.
The A-list.
In honor of it being American Thanksgiving this upcoming couple of days, we're going to get a lot of football. We're going to get a lot of people talking about food, which is a favorite pastime of mine. Potatoes win best vegetable for the 318th year. Both.
Yeah.
So in important news, potatoes win best vegetable for 318th year in a row.
Let's go.
Let's go, potatoes.
Listen, you and I are
Get
Team
that
Potato.
Bag.
You and I are Team Potato, and shove this in Blake's face.
Exactly.
Mr. Hating Potato Head.
I don't know if we really have aired Blake's absolute disgusting habit of hating potatoes. He will not eat anything with potatoes. And I mean hash browns, potato chips, fries, etc. So I just wanted to make sure that you knew the potatoes are the reigning best vegetable for 318 years. Any thoughts on that?
My main thought is that I think that's like a onion style site. I don't think that's a real thing.
No, it's a real thing.
It's a real thing.
Okay? There's no way that's a real thing.
It's a real thing, buddy. Get used to it. You're just out on your anti-potato agenda out there trying to say that it's an onion article. You're trying to make it about a different vegetable. How dare you?
There's no way there was a fruit and vegetable award in the 1700s.
There was. And potatoes won again the day. The potatoes always win. Listen, what do you think is the most underrated potato? Or what do you think is like if you...
Underrated vegetable or underrated potato?
No, potato, just because it's so good. It's so good in so many ways, right? But I have chips a lot, obviously. French fries, I'm just going to admit, I think like a good home fry or a great hash brown for me does more than a French fry does.
How about a good curly fry or a waffle fry?
See, I love a waffle fry. Wow. I'm not crazy about a curly fry.
Waffle fries are elite. But you can't get them everywhere. So I think that's part of it is like you're like, waffle fry, for sure, sign me up. And then you're like, yeah, these are amazing.
I think baked potatoes are overrated.
I don't like baked potatoes. They're dry. The skin is dry.
But they're good, but it's just like, it's all about the sour cream and the chives.
You have to load it up with a bunch of crap.
But yeah, and it takes forever to make a baked potato. You have to basically be like, okay, are we making baked potatoes? Start today. Like, start today, and then next month we'll have one.
And then you cut it open, and you think it's time to eat, and you scald the insides of your mouth.
It's just too much. But may I just say that with Thanksgiving here, one of the things I look forward to the most, just someone who makes
elite mashed potatoes.
Yeah. Someone who makes really good mashed potatoes, because it's not something that you have all the time.
Like a creamy mashed potato.
Yes.
It's got to have like a little bit of cream, a little bit of maybe even a garlic.
My mouth's watering.
Yeah. And he takes their plate. This one, we really shut you out on.
Like someone who makes mashed potatoes for you, it's like, that's love.
That is
love. You know, mashed potato, French fries aren't love.
You can get
chips
that anywhere.
Chips aren't love.
Yeah.
Mashed potatoes, that's the ultimate potato love.
How about scalloped potatoes? If you want to put on the pounds, eat a couple scalloped potatoes. It's just cream.
What are you saying, scalped potato? Scalloped.
You scalp them, buddy.
Scalloped.
Scalloped.
Scalloped. Extra syllable in there.
Scalloped potatoes.
We're just making mistakes all over the place.
Anyway, ladies, if you're wondering what JD's looking for.
Some mashed potatoes.
Oh my God.
It's a creamy mashed potato.
If you invited me over to your place, it would have to depend on what date it was. Because if you made me mashed potatoes first date, I'd be like,
that's strange. Right. Here, I made you a full turkey dinner with mashed potatoes and homemade gravy and a pumpkin pie. And it's August.
we're not there yet, babe. We need a couple dates before you bust out the mashed potatoes. But if you land it, might be going jewelry shopping.
Love that. So someone texted in, Lloyd from Georgetown said, squash should dethrone potatoes.
Yes, Lloyd, honestly,
lose our number, Lloyd.
Take a hike, Lloyd.
I've never been so sure someone's from Newfoundland.
Yeah, this guy.
He lives in Georgetown and advocating for squash over potatoes. Lloyd, text back in.
Do you have Newfie roots, Lloyd?
Lloyd, 100% right now, texting from a squash stand. Squash! You know what's really good? Lloyd, squash stands off the 401. Like, that's where he is.
He's a, what's that term?
Squash.
Jeez.
Farmer?
A lobbyist for big squash.
Yeah, big squash. All right, what's next?
Okay.
Squash.
Just a side food thing. We don't spend too much time on this, but I sent you guys that text, that tweet. Cranberry and pickle pie.
I don't want to talk about that.
Literally revolting. Apparently it's a Utah specialty around the holidays. Cranberries and pickles.
Yeah.
You could not pay me enough to eat that.
Yeah, I could. I give you $100, you'd eat that pie.
Yeah, I would.
Every day we stray further from God's light.
It reminds me a little bit of Ennis's family is from Texas. His wife's side. And his mother-in-law makes something where it's like marshmallows in Jell-O with it's nasty. It's some kind of a cake. I can't remember the name of it. I always forget it because again, I hear it and I want it out of my brain immediately.
Disgusting.
And I gotta ask him what it is. I'll text him later in the show and get the full ingredient. But it's the same thing, kind of disgusting. That's even worse though. I'd eat that, and it's his mother-in-law's specialty cake over that pickle thing from Utah. Just like Utah. Way to go. Poor Utah, though. You're only known for sucking, basically.
No, it's such a beautiful place.
Yeah, full of... And then you go there, and it's like, oh, great. It's all Mormons who don't drink here. That's fun.
It's stunning, stunning.
Stunning. If you like to ski and you have a lot of money, then that's the place for you. If it's anything else...
pick and roll defense.
Yeah, if anything else...
Put some respect on Utah. Okay, next on the A-list.
No.
Last night, this is a very strange thing that happened. Mm-hmm. The Minnesota Wild were on their way to play the New Jersey Devils, yet they stayed in Manhattan on, you know, probably in some nice ritzy place. They had to drive out to New Jersey for the game, and they were extremely late to the arena.
They get stuck on the old turnpike.
They literally got stuck in traffic. They had to delay the game an extra 30, 35 minutes. Usually an NHL team or any team shows up to the rink 2-3 hours before. You know, you have a whole routine, you prep, you everything. They got there at 6:39. The game was supposed to be at 7. So that's a quick turnaround. I got to check who won that game. Because
you know what I love about this, though? This reminds me of like when you're a kid.
Yeah.
This makes me, you get
you're
to
stuck,
the arena.
You're like, I'm on my way, coach. I'm taking the 407 now.
Yeah. You know when you'd be like get late for hockey, and especially when you were young and your parents would be like trying to dress you at home where they're like, yeah, put your stuff
you're
on.
You're in the car like putting your skates on.
Yeah. Or you had to do something before getting to the rink. And so, you're in your gear.
Yeah. It's happened to me many times. Yeah. But like you just text in, I'm so sorry. Sometimes like you'd actually sit the first period. Like my coach would be like, well, you're late. Like you're not playing.
I've had that happen too. And I was like, why am I getting punished? I didn't drive myself here. I'm not in charge
of traffic.
I'm a child.
Actually, Minnesota ended up winning.
She's so much younger that she's like, we texted in to our coach.
Yeah. You guys sent like a smoke signal or something. Yeah,
we just sent nothing. You just didn't know where anyone was.
the Wild ended up winning in a shootout. So they had some redemption. But just like, imagine being on that bus, watching the time tick closer and closer to puck drop. And you're like, we're going to miss the game. And all the fans had to sit in the arena for like an extra 30, 35 minutes and be like, all right.
Oh no, I got
to
drink an extra beer.
They probably made big money last night.
I was just going to say, that's... now the playbook for every arena. Oh, the other team is late. Concessions are still open.
Come buy some jerseys. Those new jerseys that the Devils are selling. That's probably part of their ploy.
But you sell beers because people are like, we got to get to the game. It's 6:49. Yeah. We got to be there by that. We want to be there for puck drop, all right? Who doesn't want to be there for puck drop? It's such a loser move. Whenever I see people showing up to the game late, like midway through a first period, especially here in Toronto where tickets are expensive, I am disgusted by you. I actually want you to give me the report on, like, you should have to stand up during the intermission and tell everyone why you were so late. Like, hey.
A business meeting.
Yeah, so an NBA game, I actually think it's kind of okay to be late for in the first quarter because it's just like, all right, I get it. It's the first quarter. Hockey, no. Be there on time. Football, same thing. You got to see kickoff. Not seeing kickoff at a football game and being live, it's like something aggressively bad has happened. Like really, really, really bad for this to go down.
You were put through a table at the tailgate.
Yeah.
And you couldn't get out there.
That's acceptable.
Baseball, I like to be there for first pitch, but it's not a deal breaker because I go to a lot of games. But I'm almost always there for first pitch. I'm always there for tip-off as well. I'm just saying that basketball is one where, like, I guess I'm just accustomed to the crowd being late arriving, and I don't really think too much of it. When people freak out about the Raptors in the playoffs and stuff like, this isn't right. You know, the media loves doing that move. Like, it's not, how dare the fans not support this team? I think that they'll be okay. I think the Raptors will survive the 2 minutes of fans not being in their seats.
I got one more quick one.
Yeah, I want it. I was just finishing that thought,
thinking, what?
Hockey, you got to explain. And stand-up comedy. You're late for stand-up comedy. I don't think you should be allowed in the building.
So last night at the Orlando Magic game, up on the Jumbotron, they had this couple, like a little kiss cam, and it was really cute. And they kept the video on them for like quite a while. Like they kissed a couple times, and then they kept looking up at the Jumbotron being like, all right, like move on. From us, like we've kissed. But then on the Jumbotron, it says, congratulations, James, you're going to be a dad. Yeah. And he found out he was going to be a dad up on the Jumbotron and he starts crying and him and his, I assume, wife or partner are embracing and the whole arena is cheering. I just thought that was really cute. I've never seen somebody announce their pregnancy on the Jumbotron and not burn down like a forest with like a gender reveal. So I thought that was a nice touch.
You think it was cute, Blake?
Yeah.
I bet JD thinks it was not fine.
Like, I hated it.
Hate everything, though.
I hate arena proposals and stuff like that. Like, I mean, we don't know these people. Maybe there's an extra meaning there. My biggest question, though, is...
See how he said it, though? He hates it, too. He's like, oh, it's cute. And then he's like,
but maybe it sucks.
We don't know these people, so maybe there's a whole special underlying thing.
It's called diplomacy.
It sucks when people do that. Just have your cool, intimate, private moments to yourself. Why are you doing that in an arena?
Like, so... Here would be my question. If this is a boy, and even if it's not, because names are whatever, you almost have to give it an Orlando Magic adjacent name, right?
Yeah.
Mo
Bamba as a first name. You get rid of the space. You only say this child's name in the Cole Anthony interview base. Shout out to Mo Bamba.
Yeah, I love it. I'm a big fan of that. Yeah, fine. I'll just be the hater. I'll be the black heart on this. I think it's so lame that you're finding out that you're going to be a dad. It's this one incredible moment for you. And I got to share it with the stadium full of people. And I have to worry about what's going on and the cameras and the lights. It sucks. Just tell me, like, this should be a moment. Did they make the baby with it? Am I the father? Am I about to have a Jerry Springer moment where it's like, you're about to be a dad, but anyone in this building could be the father. Like, that would be cool. I would be down for that. But the idea that you're sharing this moment with everybody, it's just so 2021. It's the clout chasing nature of it is. Ugh,
I definitely don't want to find out that way.
Yeah, you don't want to find out that way?
I don't want to find out that way.
At an arena?
You know what? I'll be honest.
I want you to find out at an arena like that. It's like they shoot
like
up
he's
to
like covering the Raptors game.
It's like the media box. Yeah, it's like Blake Murphy. He's like, sorry, there must be some other Blake Murphy here. It's kind of, could be a common name. It could be common enough. And then all of a sudden it's a media box. You are the father.
But you know what? I would agree on this because I don't think any like girl wants to be proposed to at a sporting event either. Like, don't do that. I think that it's cheesy. And also like, you're kind of like, I guess I have to say yes. Cause we're on the Jumbotron.
I see. That's always my theory with the Jumbotron proposals is that it's like, these are guys who they're like,
they're on the edge that, yeah, oh, she can't, like, say no. Yeah. We're on, gonna be on the,
you can't ruin my life, Christine. Yeah. It's like, you know,
Crindy.
There's no way that someone who would propose at an arena has the self-awareness to know that it could be a no.
Hmm. I hope someone that proposed at the arena is listening.
Text
to this
in
right
if you've
now.
Proposed at the arena.
I'm driving, like, it was a really special moment for me and my family.
That's it for the A-list, but we have no time for your question that you asked us earlier.
Well, we've got all the show.
Let's go.
Keep your answers coming to 590, 590. a time that your sibling has embarrassed you, like Steph Curry to Seth Curry last night, which is a ridiculous relocation.
If I don't get a lot of DMs, tweets, or texts about this, then
we're
not
going to do
it. There's
a couple on the text line already.
And then I'm not going to do it. So that's the threat.
Yeah,
so
it's a family holiday.
You better send something in, all right?